You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Time for your view from the C-suite here on Classic Business, where we get up close to the country's leaders to find out what makes them tick, what keeps them up at night, and what's their approach to leadership and leading through a global pandemic. And my next guest occupies an altogether different C-suite, that of the coaching box. He's known for always wearing his heart on his sleeves, and he's sort of a big deal in Japan as well. You may have heard about the miracle of Brighton, the day that the Cherry Blossoms defeated the Springboks 34-30. In their opening fixture of the 2015 Rugby World Cup. That happened in Brighton, and obviously Heineke Meyer happened to be the head coach of the Springboks at the time. He's just published his new book, and it's a great pleasure to chat to you today, Heineke. Welcome to the show.
No, thank you very much. It's a big honor, and thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Now, it's a personal thing, putting that Brighton loss out there, and you really do, right in the front of the book. You've been incredibly successful as a coach, first at the Bulls and then with the Springboks, but that loss, I think, shows you that in rugby, as in life, you're never bigger than the game. How much did that loss teach you at the time?
Yeah, first of all, you know, when I wrote the book, most guys only write about their successes, and I didn't want to do that because I believe in trying to be humble, don't always get it right. So there's a great lot of successes which I didn't write about, but I truly feel that if you really want to relate to the people and to the public and be honest and authentic, you also have to talk about the losses. You know, that was what that really hurt. And, you know, obviously I wasn't proud of that, and you want to make your country proud. But I think the great thing of that is it's a learning experience, and that's what I want to, you know, relate in the book, is that I've studied all the successful people in life. And you're all going to have setbacks. You know, you just have to go out there and fight one more round. But what I'm proud of, you have to learn, because if you learn from it, it's not a mistake. And I don't want to take credit from Rossi or the current crop, but they said you can't win the World Cup if you lose a game. It's never happened before. And we lost against Japan, and there's a lot of reasons, but I take full responsibility. But the way we fought back, and I wrote about it in the book, I'm very, very proud. And guys like Fourie said it was their best time in the box. And we lost by 2 points against, I believe, the best team that's ever played a game. And to take it a step further is that this year, last year, the box lost further against the All Blacks. But they came back and won the championship or the World Cup. And that's what you learn of that. A lot of those guys were involved in that defeat, and they learned from that. And that's what I want to portray in the book. You know, you're going to get setbacks, but you have to learn from it and go and be successful.
And I think that's certainly what I take from the book, because in business, as in sports, you're going to have setbacks. And I think all the successful entrepreneurs I've ever interviewed, Heineke, had this ability to turn their setbacks into learning moments, into learning experiences. It's this ability to bounce back from failure. And that's what I really like about the way you've weaved these various lessons. It's not necessarily about your tenure as this highly decorated coach, nor is the book really an autobiography. Rather, it's about the life lessons that you learned over this coaching career through incredible highs and lows, and almost a sort of self-help book that's been fashioned in this this white-hot furnace of rugby at the highest level. Just as we talk about you writing the book now and sitting down to write the book at this time, was it that you found you had a little bit more time on your hands due to COVID and the lockdowns? Just take me through the background to putting pen to paper right now.
Yeah, you know, I've been asked a lot to write an autobiography, especially when we're successful with the Bulls, and I say we, and with the box. You know, there was a lot of great times as well that people forget. And again, I rather want to concentrate on the you know, the losses. But I don't believe in writing autobiography and or my own. There's other great autobiographies out there, because I don't believe if I really would have write what happened to me through 30 years of coaching, it will be a bestseller. Because but then you have to, you know, you have to be critical of guys, and you have to, you know, stamp on toes. And that's not what I'm about. I want to make a difference. So I'll be honest with you, I never liked the limelight. I believe a coach should be in the background. So I considered, you know, I knew writing this thing, Japan's going to come up, and a lot of things is going to come up. But I always coach to make a difference. And at one stage, you know, I knew people need inspiring, and people need help. And I read a very great article or very story. Muhammad Ali was one of my inspirations, and I think he's a great, great champion. And he fought against Sonny Liston. The whole world believe Ali doesn't have a chance, because Liston is a you know, he was an animal. He was the world champ, and he was unbeaten. People thought he could never lose. And then in the fifth round, Ali, the Liston camp put Deepit on the gloves and hit Ali in the eye. And he wanted to stop in the fifth round. And he said, listen, I want the whole world to see what happened, because this is cheating. And then Angelo Dundee is his coach, and you're not going to quit. And he pushed him into the sixth round, and Ollie had a great sixth round. And when the seventh round came, the whole world couldn't believe it. Sonny Liston actually threw in the towel, which is unthinkable. So I tell you the story is I was sitting and contemplating, must I write or not? And then I believe I want to give somebody inspiration out there. And my whole message in the book is, go out there and fight one more round. We South Africans, don't give up. We've inspired the world. We've got great leaders around the world. And if we stand together, everything is possible. So there's no use for me writing autobiography and be critical of people and sell a lot of books. I said, if I can make a difference in people's lives and one guy come and say, listen, you've helped me, I'll be happy. And I had unbelievable feedback. It's a top 10 seller and it's the best sports book at this stage. So I'm really humbling. But I'm happy I did it because I'm really making a difference, I believe.
And I think at a time like this, Heineke, specifically when people are approaching what they might feel is burnout due to COVID, the stress of not knowing what's going to happen next. Will their business survive? Will they be able to pay for their children's school fees? When will we return to normal, if ever? All of these things are creating an environment that requires one to really dig deep, to find that grit and resolve. What advice would you have for people just to help them get through this particular pandemic and the stage that we find ourselves in at the moment?
Yeah, like I said to you, and this is probably harsh words, and this is my point five in my book. It's very simple principles. I wanted to make it simple. It's an easy read, and you can read it in a day and a half or in a day. And my point five is mental toughness. And like I said to you, I studied all the great leaders and all the great people in the world. You're going to get setbacks. And I'll come back to the advice now. But, it's like a butterfly. I always say to my teams when they've lost, it's like a butterfly. A butterfly is one of the most beautiful things, and it's there for the world to see. But it comes out of a puppy or a cocoon. It has to struggle to get out of the cocoon. If you help it and take the scissors and open it and make it easy, they won't develop, and their wings won't develop, and they will die. So the more they struggle, the stronger they are, and the more beautiful. And, the best steel goes to the warmest fires. I really know it's tough, but you have to see it. This is a strength in yourself, getting more clear and being stronger, come stronger out of it. It's easy to talk. I also had COVID, and then I used these principles. And I was thankful. I wanted to help other people, but also help me. So just to get back to the question is, my first point is you have to have a vision. You have to have a vision, because the bigger the vision, the more the energy. And don't be realistic. It's like, it's like Neil Armstrong wanted to go and walk on the moon. I mean, what's realistic on that? So when you have a vision and you have setbacks, but the vision is big enough, you have clear focus. And I always say to people, and I believe this, every morning when you wake up, you have a decision to be positive or negative. And it takes the same amount of energy. And when I had COVID and even now, if people phone me and say, oh, I hope you're okay. And then the next thing is they say, listen, did you hear this guy and this guy and this guy died? So I didn't take any calls anymore and said, tell me about the 90% people that's making it. And I say this with a lot of empathy because my whole family was sick. But when you open the news and all you read is negative things, and in your business as well, and business is going down. So you have to be positive and stick to your vision and, be true to yourself. And there's a lot of opportunities now. I believe there's a lot of opportunities. I've just had a course this weekend, unbelievable course. And the guy giving courses, he has to travel and he has to be, speak to 250, 300 people. But what happened is now suddenly with Zoom, he gets into more countries. We were guys from Madagascar, South Africa, all over the world. So there is positive. But if you're going to be negative the whole time and don't see it and start to stress and worry, obviously, you're going to struggle. And there's also, there's a lot of other opportunities that's going to open up. So I know it's easy to talk. I'm also going through ups and downs. But if we focus and be mentally tough, we're South Africans. We fight one more round. We'll get through this.
Yeah, and that's certainly the story that you recount of the way you got that young Bulls team to really buy into this vision to become the best in the world. And it was so perfectly encapsulated in the match against the Reds, where they had to win by a margin. I think it was 73 points or 72 points. And you added three in just for a bit of safety and one for luck. So you made it 76 points that you wanted the winning margin to be. And they eclipsed that. But it's the story behind that, Heineke, about how you actually got this team to believe in this. And it wasn't just writing a number down once. You literally got every single player to sign into this. Just share that story with us, because I found that fascinating.
I can actually write the book just about that. Eddie Jones was the coach. He's a great coach. And what was strange, I learned a lot about the mind, and that's my second step. You have to believe in your vision. We work out how many points we have to win, And obviously everybody thought that it's better just to come fourth and then we'll play the Sharks and then obviously I have to go away if we beat them. And I knew if you don't play at home, you don't have a chance. So I got a team in and it's a team effort and said, listen, I truly know we can do this. And I said to the guys, I'm going to go for that, but I need you to go for it because there's no use in that. You have to align the visions. So I walked out of the room and I'm not going to go into much depth and came back after 10 minutes and I asked every single guy, are you willing to go for it? Then the second thing I said, listen, but it's important to believe it. It's easy to say it, but you have to believe it. So I went through certain things to explain them the 4-minute mile, which has never been done. They say it's impossible, and a lot of things that's impossible. And I told them about a team that I coached who won by 102-0, which was also impossible. And I just keep telling them and making them aware that it is possible. And then each guy had to stand up and say they believe it. So I said, listen, this is very, very easy. We have to score 13 tries. I've worked out exactly what we needed, 13 tries. So I said, you know, Brian, you need to score three tries. Akona, two, and Roots, two. So then I said, I need another 6 tries out of the team. So guys must put up their hands. I remember it so well. Pierre put up his hand for 2, and I wrote everything down. And I say, this is like eating an elephant. You have to do it bit by bit. So I went through every single aspect of play. Derek Ogaard, you have to kick all the goals, and you have to, you know, Victor and them have to take all the lineouts, 30% of their lineouts. I said, we need to... You know, we need to make most of our tackles, give only 7 penalties away. Vickers was the open side flanker. I said, you can give away 2, but the rest of the team, I need 10 guys that doesn't give a penalty. So we went through every single thing through that game. And then I said, now it's easy. And what is very important, you need the guys to really buy into it. So we wrote everything down. And then I had the guys go out and sign, if they really believe it, and go for it to sign next to their what they've promised. Then I made a video of all our best plays, show the players one by one and exactly what they promised and show all our best tries. That's just visualization. I went to see the referee as well and said to him, listen, Calvin Diga, we're going to do it. We've done it before. Just give us a fair game. So he says, impossible, mate. I said, no, we're going to do it. Just give us, a fair game. What's very important about that specific game is when the guys went home, their families told them it's impossible. All their families told them it's impossible, but they believed it. Even in my family, it was my father-in-law's birthday, and my wife said, listen, you have to pack because you're going to fly to New Zealand. I said, no, we're going to play at home because I truly, truly believed it. And in the video, I had 76 popping up the whole time. You actually needed 72, but I just worked for in. So if they have a penalty somewhere because it happened against Province where they could go for goal the previous year. Yeah. So we worked everything out, and I knew when I saw the team the next day that I truly believe this and they truly in for it and they're going to go for it. You know, we started off well. And what was very strange is I spoke to Jan Roots. They scored the first 3 points. And Jan Roots said he didn't want, I think it was Kaskowski, the fullback. He didn't want him to kick the goal. Just take the points because we need time. We want to go. And I remember halftime, I think it was 53 or something. And Brian just missed a try. And I climbed into them and said, listen, this is not good enough. We need 38 points of something the second half, and we've got it. And just to point something out, it wasn't just this one game. You know, when we came back from overseas, we needed 5 points in every single game. That means 4 tries. So I said the week, like 3 weeks before that, we played the Lions. And I said, remember the 2002 final? Nobody gave us a chance. We won 32-7 away from home. I said, give me more or less that score, but I'll take that exact score. So it means 4 tries and a bonus point. I'll take that exact score. And you're not going to believe me. It's worse than winning the lotto. Go and look at that score in 2007. It's exactly the same as 2002. I think it's 32-7.
Yep.
So it just shows you, which is almost unbelievable. And I went through every week I did this. It was unbelievable. Buys buying in. Energy is there. Believing in your vision. And it happened. You know, it happened.
And all the way to the end, Heinicke, because I remember attending that final in Durban back in 2007. And as a Lions supporter for lifelong suffering, couldn't bring myself to support the Bulls. So I was actually rooting for the Sharks. And we were guests of some mates from Clough. And I actually missed Brian's winning try because I thought it was sewn up for the Sharks. I think it was Albert Vandenberg scored. There was something like 2 minutes left on the clock. And I really desperately needed to go to the little boy's room after a little bit too much amber hydration. So I thought, let me beat the crowds. And then in the bowels of Kings Park, I just heard the silence and this explosion that erupted afterwards because Durban was just flooded with Bull supporters that weekend. And I think it's a moment that will live long in the memory for so many South Africans. But it's a testament to the amount of belief that you managed to instill in this team?
Because it relates to this matter, I can tell you one of the things I said to my team talk, if I may.
Please.
So we sat in there and Bucky's, I can see him in front of me sweating, and Victor and Furi and all these guys, and we've been together for 7 years. So we know this is the point. We have to go through this. I said that there's a little town that was praying for rain because it was really, really, you know, it was a drought and they were praying for rain. And they invited the 100 most religious people and they prayed for 4 hours. And the guy that was number 100, he just made it. He brought his son. This is part of my team talk. So after 4 hours, this little kid asked his dad, "Dad, do you think it's going to rain?" And he says, "Definitely. These are the great, great religious guys. They've prayed. It's definitely going to rain." And he said, "Dad, I don't understand one thing. If it's going to rain and these guys believe it, I haven't seen one guy, not one, bringing an umbrella." So my whole team talk was a champion. You mustn't actually believe it. You must know it. And I said, I remember I said, "Bucky's, if I tell you you must jump out of an airplane with a parachute, will you do it?" He says, "I'm not sure." I said, "Listen, but if I tell you you must jump out of a parachute, out of a plane with a parachute, and I pack parachutes for life, I know how to pack parachutes. I know it will open. It will definitely open. That's what I've been doing. Will you jump?" "Yes, because you know it's going to happen." So my whole team talk was, you mustn't believe, you must actually know. And then the day before, I took a picture of Victor Matfield. South African team has never won the Super Rugby because guys believe it was impossible. And I took a mock photo and write Blue Bulls, first team to win Super Rugby. And I showed it the morning of the game. So I said to them, "I don't care what happened. Keep on believing. Not believing, then there's an option. Keep on knowing. Till the last second, it's going to happen." And this is the truth. I remember as they walked out of the team talk, I got Brian, and he was the last guy. I said, "Brian, you have to make something special. Even just the last minute, you have to do something special. I've just got that feeling." So at halftime, they showed me and said, "I'm losing it, and you know I'm always like emotional." But I said to the team, "Listen, I know we're going to win this. Keep on knowing." And then there was 2 minutes left, and I haven't said this to a lot of people. And then when Albert van der Berg scored a try, my head dropped. And I heard a voice as loud as today that said, "Heineke, you know," and it was an Afrikaans. I said, "Listen, you tell the teams they mustn't believe, they must know. Now you're not actually knowing." And then it was so clear, I put back my mic and said to Vani Sodom, "Listen, we're going to win this game. Put pressure on Frans Steyn. He's going to lose, miss the kick. We kick off, we keep the ball, and we're going to win." He says, "Coach, you're crazy. I know you're positive, but you're crazy." I said, "Just follow my instructions." And then Frans Steyn missed the ball. And then we start playing. We kicked off, got a ball back, 18 phases, and they scored the winning try. And then Derek Hougaard said the whole team jumped up, except him, because he still had to take the kick. But it just shows you that, you know, we really knew we were going to win, not believe. And that's it's not an arrogance, and I'm not saying how great a team was. I'm just saying out there in these times, if you have a vision and you believe and you know you're going to get through this, you will. You will.
That is the take-home message, I think, for so many business leaders out there at the moment, is to have that confidence and that belief. And much of that stems from the leader. And I mean, you right, and you spoke about that now, not putting your head down at the 78th minute and actually saying, "Well, I have to believe here." And you do write that a leader has got to align his vision with those of his team. What did you encounter at the Bulls when you arrived back in the early 2000s in terms of alignment? And then how did you turn that around as a leader, being mindful that you're walking and stepping into a culture that's always difficult to change? Any culture is resistant to change. And doing that in a way that obviously steps on as few toes as possible to change the system and to ensure that you bring people along with you behind this vision.
Yeah, the first thing is the leader is the light switch. And that was the most difficult for me being coach, because if you lose, you know, I take it very personal. It took me 2-3 days to get over it. But Monday, come Monday, you have to get in and put up a brave face and a smile. And if you don't put on the light, your work is not going to, you're not going to switch them on. So you have to work there, pick your head up and be positive. But what we did was, and again, I like to tell stories. So when we came together with this Blue Bulls team, they were 12th in Currie Cup and they were last in Super Rugby. So we came together on a camp and work out, and our vision was to be the best team in the world. And then we lost 11 out of 11. And the reason was, and I take full responsibility as always, but it was a regional thing. We had the Pumas, the Falcons, the Leopards, and the Bulls, and we couldn't work together. And I had this big board made up, best team in the world. Guys must come from all over the world and see what we do. And so when it was a regional team, we couldn't win because there was no unity, no buying into the vision. So when we lost 11 out of 11, they all went back to their unions. And we had this vision and written out, and we had a company in helping us exactly with goals. And then I took my young team, Victor and them was 22, a lot of them were 19, 20. And I went to those goals again. Now it's not a regional team, it's only our little Bulls team. And then, you know, I went through every single thing, and they must mark it out of 10, and everything was ahead of, you know, above 90. So I knew we were on the right track. And I was almost fired, and my wife got cancer, so I knew I was in trouble because I couldn't, you know, if I was fired, I couldn't pay the bills, and my kids were 6 months, 2 years, and 4 years, and I can't look after them. So when the Bulls came together, I said, well, point five is fighting back. And we reiterate our vision, and we work back and came back from that and won the Currie Cup, the 32-7, which is the highest winning margin ever. So it's very, very important to align the vision of the team with the vision of the company. And I always say this to leaders or young coaches or whoever wants to listen. If you take a photo, in my school days, we used to take photos. It goes away. We get it back in 2 weeks. And then you can decide if you want it or not. So the most important thing is the person who you look at first is yourself. Mm. When that picture comes back, you look at yourself. And then you look at the nicest girl, and then you look at your friends. So what I'm trying to say is, if you just have a vision where the team can't buy into, it's not aligned with their goals, you'll never be successful. So we took a lot of time, understand each other's values, understand this culture, and aligned our vision that it's a win-win for everyone. If the team win, they're all going to be Springboks. A lot of those guys, most of them weren't accepted at the unions, like Victor was in Griquas, and I can go through all of them. But they knew if the team is going to do well, they're going to do well. And not just that 2007, and what was great for me when the team, and I keep on saying we, when the team won the 2007 trophy, Wayne Strangham took that board out to be the best team in the world and said, Coach, you know what? I think you were right all along. And what was great, people from all over the world came and learned from us and study what we do. And even up till now, they do a lot of those things. So it's so important in leadership that you align your vision with the team. It needs to be a buy-in. You can't tell them what to do. You can't force them what to do. They have to buy in. And that's when that you know, when we chased that 92-3 score, I could have said to them, listen, we're going to do it. But that was my goal. So I had to get them to first decide if they want to buy in, and secondly, to sign. And then, you know, so it was a buy-in from everyone. I asked them to how many tries they scored. And what was strange, when I went back to that goals, every single one of those things happened, except Brian missed one try just before halftime. But he scored two and not
three. Didn't he drop one?
Yes. So it's almost unbelievable, but it's not unbelievable. You know, I've seen it so many times in my life. If you truly believe and you're aligned and you have work ethic, which is point three, and you have setbacks, you enjoy the journey, point six, and you need people in your life. You know, I always say the Lone Ranger wasn't alone. Tarzan wasn't alone. And Edmund Hillary was the first guy in New Zealand to climb Mount Everest, but he had Tenzin Norway's Sherpa. So you can't do it alone. And if you use these principles, I truly believe you will be successful, even in these times.
And speaking of not being able to do it alone, I mean, you write in the book about your wife beating cancer. Linda, she then set out to summit a number of the highest mountain peaks on Earth. And there's a picture of her conquering Mount Elbrus in Russia, which is 5,600 meters odd above sea level. That's the highest mountain in Europe. What role did your family play in supporting you through the highs and the lows, you know, through the Brightons and also the phenomenal achievements that you achieved beating the All Blacks and lifting the Super Rugby Trophy and the Currie Cup so many times? How important is family to you in all of that?
Yeah, the odd thing is in life, and I speak about work ethic, you have to pay a price. And the sad thing in rugby is your family pay the price, because sometimes I didn't have social media. I tried to don't read the media, and I didn't knew it, but it's really, really tough on your kids, you know. I saw my second son, Heineke. I only saw him for 30 days in his first year because we toured the world. I was Nick Mallett's assistant in 99. But you can't do it alone in the world. You need people around you. And my family has been brilliant, you know. My wife and kids have been really supportive. You only realize later when I came back from the World Cup is, you know, they take it worse because they need to face people. My son was the head boy at Afi's. And when we lost against, it was his matric farewell. And he just left. He just left after 2 hours. So if you don't have people that's around you and that support you and goes through the highs and lows, there's no way you can do it. So my family's been brilliant. They've supported me throughout my life. And again, there's always positive. COVID now, I spend more time. They now teenagers, and I spend more time with them than ever. So there's always a positive. You just have to find it. But you can't do it alone. You know, you need family or people around you that support you. Otherwise, you'll never be successful. And, you know, all the wins and all the successes, it was my management team. You know, they've been brilliant supporting me, and they don't always get a credit. But my family, you know, I really want to thank them. They've been awesome. I'm so proud of my three boys, and I dedicated the book to them and the life lessons to them.
And what's next for you now, Heineke? What are the next steps in terms of your personal journey? South African rugby, obviously, it was on a high after Russie won the World Cup under Siya Kolisi's leadership as well. But one feels that there's still a lot to do at a franchise level to ensure that the Springboks can consistently compete with the likes of the All Blacks. And they really get the professional management of the game probably better than most other countries.
Yeah, you know, they're brilliant. They've got good structures. But again, we've always lost guys overseas. Last year was the first year I think they lost more than us, 80 players, and that's why we're under trouble. And that's in the World Cup. They didn't have the experience. First time ever All Black team I've seen with no experience, especially in the back three. And we've got experience now. So I think we can still do long. Still do great for years to come. You know, we've got great guys, 27 years old, all on 50 test matches. And that was always my goal when I picked a lot of those guys at 20, 21, like Pollard and them. And like when Pollard was 20, 21, he was fly off, and Carter was on 140 test matches, and Pollard was on 7.
Yeah.
I had Damien and Jesse on 5 test matches. They had Conrad Smith and now on 140 something. So now we've got experience. So I believe the Springboks can do brilliantly going forward. But for myself, you know, I just like to make a difference. And I said, if somebody can read a book, you don't make money out of books. If somebody can come back and say, I've influenced their life, I'll be happy, and I have unbelievable feedback, and it's a top 10 bestseller and the best sporting book. So I just like to help people, and I like to coach. I've started a business, Invictus Invictus Entertainment, Sport and Entertainment. So I'm mentoring a lot of young players, a lot of young coaches. I'm doing business talks, and I'm mentoring business coaches. So I'll never say never. I love rugby. It's a great, great game. It enriched my life, especially the players. So the right opportunity come, I'll definitely want to coach again, and I definitely want to coach in my country. But at this stage, I enjoy what I'm doing. I spend a lot of family time, and if I can make a difference anywhere, I just want to do it. So I enjoy the business coaching, executive coaching, but my heart's in rugby, so sooner or later I'll probably be back on a rugby field.
Well, Heineke, we'd love to see you back on the rugby field, and I think business leaders in the interim could learn a lot about how to become mentally tougher and to withstand the cauldron of pressure and how to go about that from reading the book and the lessons that you share from your excellent career in rugby. It's been fascinating chatting to you as someone who loves rugby and business, really thoroughly enjoyed the book and the anecdotes. And I'd just like to thank you for your contribution to South African rugby.
If I may, I would love to end off with probably the most important thing for me. And if we have time, if I may.
Sure.
You know, I actually wrote the book, like I said, to show you that everybody gets highs and everybody gets lows. I'm telling this story not to tell you how great I am. I tell you this story to relate with Norman people out there, because I come from the wrong school, the wrong town. I wasn't a great player. I was no one. Everybody said, wherever I went at school, you will never coach South Africa, and university, wherever I went in my life. And then in 95, Sanlam had an insurance policy where you can save 200, 300 rands a month, and then you can go to the 99 World Cup, which is 4 years, 3.5 years away. So in 95, I was a schoolboy coach, only a schoolboy coach. And I've got a lot of respect for our schoolboy coaches. And I said to my friend Piet Kluter, I'm going to go to that World Cup. I don't care, but I didn't have money. At 27, 26 of the month, I had no more money. I only teach for 2 years just to learn about teaching and coaching. It sounds impossible now looking back, but 95 schoolboy coach, I used these principles. 99, I was 32 years old, younger than most of the players, and I was Nick Mallett's forward coach at that World Cup. It's impossible. And I'm just not saying this to tell you how great I am. I tell you this because in these difficult times with your business or whatever you do, I was a nobody. I'm still a nobody. If I can do it, surely there's a lot of gifted people out there that can do it and reach their dreams. Just don't give up on your dreams in this time. Keep on fighting one more round. Enjoy what you're doing. And we South Africans, we can come through this. There will be new opportunities. Just keep on fighting and be positive. So thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And, you know, I'm just proud to be a South African. And if I can help somebody out there, I'll be really, really happy.
Heineke Meyer, on his notes on leadership and life, enough said.